And all I know is I am safe this week in fantasy football because James has less points than I do.
Hello, football fans, and welcome to the CBFA podcast with your hosts, James Parks and Cole Fortner.
Okay, so welcome to the episode six, I guess. Last week I messed it up. It's episode six for sure this time of the 2025 season of the CBFA podcast.
And or if it's easier to remember week four.
We're reviewing the week four action, but it is our sixth episode. So yeah, week four review. And Scott Deusing is joining Cole and I again. So thank you, Scott, for joining us.
You're welcome.
We will... of course, get your opinion. Tell us what you saw in your game. Give us a recap.
Well, I was going to say, we were the last game of the day. Why don't we start with the earlier ones and we'll finish? Because I may be biased, but I thought it might have been the funnest game of the weekend. So why don't we start with the early games and then I'll finish off if that works for you guys.
See, the only issue with that was we were going to switch things up this week. And
okay.
Start off by hosting us, but we were okay. Also going to have Kevin and Chris join.
Oh, that makes sense.
Morning games and they
make sense.
So. Yeah, they're not here yet.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough.
Everything's just been thrown to the fan.
I liked how you guys planned this, James and Cole. Good job. So,
right?
Okay, didn't remember.
Yeah, good job. All right. We'll start off. Well, so the last game of the afternoon on Heller, there was two games going on. The Cowboys and Bulldogs were over in Encana, and then Stampeders and Rebels were on at a Heller. Was the battle of the... Both still teams with no wins. The Rebels were 0-3 and the Stampeders were 0-3 coming through. So both teams were looking for that first W of the season. I'd say Stamps got it started off right off the foot of Stas Oberankowski, literally, no pun intended, as he kicked a rouge through the end zone to start on the kickoff to make it 1-0. There was some back and forth in the quarters after that. Enzo Quattrucci was the quarterback for the Rebels. Thought he looked really good. He was finding his receivers, rolls out really well too, which you've seen. I've seen that now in the 4 weeks. You know, you got quarterbacks like Devin Bacon-Babone, even Centroni with the Lions. They have guys that can move around, and you know, obviously, just another skill for these, like the Stampeders from the last year, as he's now moved on to All Saints and Junior, is Bastion Pascal, and he was their quarterback last year, and he was a similar quarterback that can move around. So seeing a similarity across the teams now, but yeah, no, it was a good start by the Rebels as well. The Stamps D held them, you know, on the first couple of drives, but then I believe it was their third drive near the end of the first quarter, Rebels were able to get in the end zone. He completed a pass over the middle to Alex Corbett, got him into about the 5 or 6, and then I believe it was Noel Williams actually ran it around on a nice little jet sweep to make it 7-1. After that, the next drive for the Stampeders, they were actually able to get their first touchdown of the season. They had kind of fumbled the kickoff a little bit. It went off the leg of, I believe, David Nanoli, and actually went up about 20, 25 yards. Thankfully, they were able to get on top of it. It was Aiden McDonald recovered the kickoff. And then first play from scrimmage, David Nanoli gets a nice pitch and runs at 75 yards for the first touchdown for the Stamps. So that made it at that time 7-7 as they were unsuccessful to get the convert. That was actually one thing that you probably saw too, Cole. Every snap on the touchdowns was fumbled or it was a bad snap. So the converts actually, there were no good kicks in all this game. For the Rebels, they actually didn't make much of a difference as they were able to run in the convert each time and get the single point and get something off something on the board. The Stampeders, they fumbled they had a bad snap there, and they tried to pass it into the end zone, but weren't able to succeed. So it was a tight game. Defensive, actually, field position came in as well, as the Stampeders were able to keep the Rebels deep in their end zone and force the Rebels to take a safety. And it was the score was 9-7 going in for the Stampeders going into the second half. So pretty tight contest. It started that way through the third quarter, and then I mentioned it before, Enzo Quattrucci finds a deep Alex Corbett, a running back. He was kind of in that wide receiver position, and he took it all the way to the house to give the Rebels a 13-7 lead, 13-9 lead, sorry, and then they were able to get again another fumbled snap, but run it in to make it 14-9. It went back and forth, and it literally came down to the last drive. There was a few penalties, and then Tanner Hill, the quarterback, was able to get him all the way down to the one. It was a nice sweep by Cub Sherman to get him to about the 1 yard line, and then Tanner Hill, with about 30 seconds left, punched it in the end zone. So I'm gonna say it's probably the loudest I've heard Hellard Field this season so far, because it was back and forth, and it was actually a very both fans, to their credit, were cheering on their teams. But again, the Stamps made it 17-14, and that's the way it ended. So good all-around game. It was like, again, there was some miscues on offense by fourth teams, a couple of little fumbles, as you see at this age anyway, but really good defensive play as well. Players of the game, if I remember right, was Noah Williams. He was number 14 for the Rebels, had a couple of really good jet sweeps. It seemed to be a big play for the Rebels. They like to get their receivers running. And then for the Stampeders was number 33, Jack Sarita. Could have been a few guys. Stas Oberinkowski also had a good game at that running back position and ran well, but they gave it to Jack Sarita, and he had a couple of nice catch and runs there from quarterback Tanner Hill. Tanner Hill was also looking for Cub Sherman a few times, found him in the flats, and it was probably the best offensive game for the Stampeders, but tough as they only had 4 points combined in the past three games, so getting 17 was a big outburst for them. So put them to be 1-3 in the season, and their first win as they go into the week five here. And Rebels still 0-4, looking for that first win coming into week five. So that's the recap of that game, guys.
Well, the tough thing is too for the Rebels is that's 3 straight weeks where they've lost by one score.
Yes.
And it's like they have been in control and doing extremely well in those games, and it's just come down to that late fourth quarter drive that's happened, that's done it for them.
It was actually back and forth in that third and fourth quarter. I thought both teams could was I it was kind of that, don't want to say heavyweight, maybe a welterweight contest, because both teams were punching back at each other, like, and you were on the ups in the box, as we are now back in the box at Hellard Field in the stands. So that was nice, a little different than being on field level. But yeah, no, both teams were going back, and I looked at the start of the third. I thought the Rebels might take this, but then Stamps, to their credit, defensively had a couple of big plays. And guys like Hunter Warner made a couple of good plays. Lucas Clark, number 15 linebacker, had a couple of big plays too. And then kept him in it and allowed their offense one more chance to get there and air out that ball and run it down. So credit too to David Nanoli, the first touchdown of the year for the Stamps, a big run. I think that's been one thing the Stampeders have been trying to find, a little bit more consistency from the running back spot. But that seems to be every team here at this Bantam age group, right? Once you get a good running back and able to get the yards that way, really changes the game and opens up the offense. So good. Yeah. So good week four and that first W for the Stampeders. And we'll see what happens in week five here as they take on the Cowboys.
So, James, you had the other late game of the day.
Indeed. Yeah, I was over at Encana, and it was the Bulldogs, who were coming into the game undefeated, taking on the Cowboys, who were coming in just off of their first win of the year. And as we were talking last week, we weren't sure what kind of game we would see. And it was not a game either of us thought we would see. It was a dominating performance by the Cowboys, especially on defense and special teams. The Bulldogs, they couldn't manage to get too many first downs strung together. The Cowboys were able to keep them from getting momentum. They kept turning the ball over. They actually scored on a I think it was a interception return. They also scored on special teams a couple of times and basically had the game wrapped up before halftime. It was 32-0 at halftime, and they you know, to Coop's credit, he played a lot of his backups in the second half and on offense, but you know, the defense still, they kept the Bulldogs buttoned up the entire second half. Added a field goal, and that was it. 35-0 was the final.
Nice. That Bulldogs team was coming in undefeated, just like the Raiders as well, right? They had won all three games. And yeah, you know, as I could hear it on the speakers when you guys said, oh, it's going to runtime. And that's exactly what the crews had said. This was a kind of result nobody expected coming into week four.
Yeah. And I will say, there was a standout player on the Bulldogs team. He was the Wolf Cadillac player of the game, Tim Mukhametsianov. And he was the return guy, and he was also an important guy on their offense, even though he wasn't able to do much on his own. He was electric on his returns. He was able to really turn it upfield and make some guys miss and make some exciting plays. And he gave his offense, you know, good field position to start in. They just weren't able to do anything with it.
Yeah, he was a kid I called, not only just because the week before when they had beat the Stampeders 20-1, I believe, he had a good game. And not only does he have probably the hardest name to pronounce as an announcer in Bantam football this year, but yeah, he was kind of a jack of all trades for them. A returner, he's a safety, he punts, he does a lot for that Bulldogs team, like you said there, James.
All right,
so I guess we'll just continue going backwards in order.
Might as well.
Game of the day. I'll touch on the first three games of the day, even though I don't have really any notes because I was busy looking through a camera lens for most of the time. Middle game of the day was the Raiders taking on the Lions, which I think last week we thought was going to be a good test for the Lions to see really where they're at. Going into that game at a 2-1 record, whereas the Raiders are arguably the powerhouse of the league right now.
Yeah, I was also, I did see that game. I was on the sidelines for that one. And the one thing that stuck out to me was that the Raiders were, you know, solid on all phases of the game. They were excellent on defense. They were excellent on offense. You know, they hit their assignments. They were crisp in their patterns. The throws were, you know, technically efficient. It was a display.
Yeah, no, like the Raiders, I think there was one thing we questioned on the sideline, and that was, like you mentioned previously, Scott, in the Stamps game, is the quarterback ability to bootleg out and throw on the run. We noticed it on the sidelines where it was, because Benke Bibwane has a left-hand throw.
Yep.
The Raiders are still rolling him out to the right instead of switching their playbook to roll him out on the left to make his throw easier. So there's one play in particular where he rolled out right like a normal right-handed quarterback would, and you can tell it's just play design because that's how coaches think, and his throw just looked the most awkward it could. I don't remember if the pass was complete or not, but
you try throwing across your body at a full stride.
it's not easy. And he has a big stride too.
Yeah, he's a big kid.
You know, it's watching it, it's like you can almost tell, it's like, maybe I don't think the coaching staff has thought about that one too much. You're not used to the lefty quarterback.
Mirror the playbook.
Well, I see as well, because I showed up to the end of that game where kind of the Raiders already had the game kind of, you know, wrapped up, so to speak. And they already had Hudson McDonald, their backup quarterback, in the backup quarterback, in playing, and he plays starting receiver again. He played Pee Wee last year, and he has a great skill set too. So just an embarrassment of riches for that Raiders organization. My assumption is this is Benke Bibwane's last year of Bantam. He'd probably move on to high school after this, but I think they're going to be in just fine shape with Hudson McDonald for next season.
Well, yeah, just looking at last year, how many players from the Andrew Storm, you know, are coming up over the next 2 years. Like, they went and had an outrageous year last year in Pee Wee.
Yeah.
Of course, with the Raiders also winning Bantam last year, upsetting the Colts in the city finals. And, you know, it's, there's a lot of depth and a lot of talent in Airdrie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's Raiders are definitely the heavy, heavy favorite and the team to beat once again this year.
Absolutely.
Then moving earlier in the day, I think we have the a fight for your game of the week. The Eagles taking on the Wildcats. Both those teams coming into that game at a 2-1 record. And that game was, again, I don't really have much notes again looking through it from the camera lens, but that game was incredibly even. Both teams, you know, I think the first half is where most of the points were scored. Both teams marched the ball up and down the fields. Defenses kept them in it. It was level pegging the entire way. And again, it came down inside the last minute where it was tied. And you know, I think most of the fourth quarter, most of the second half, it was, okay, this game might actually finish deadlocked. We might have, you know, we're looking at, it's like, is it going to come down to a rouge like we had last week against, you know, what, the Mavericks Rebels? And it did. The Eagles managed to march the ball far enough down the field to get it within, you know, in CFL it would be field goal range. It was like a 30-yard chip shot at that rate. But we don't really have the field goal kickers necessarily in our league to do that. So they call the timeout, discuss what they were going to do during the timeout, because I went down to that end zone. During the timeout, you hear the Wildcats players, you know, they knew what happened the week before. I think they knew that what happened with the week before, and they're yelling, get it out, make sure you get it out, do whatever you can to get it out. And right before the play got off, the Wildcats called a timeout. So I think they had the same discussion with their players, you know, just get it out by any means necessary. Then the play happened. The Wildcats kicker kicked it beautifully deep into the back corner of the end zone. And there wasn't, by the time the Wildcats returner got it, you know, 5 yards were given by the Eagles defense, and that returner was just surrounded with nowhere to go. Players and coaches at this level don't necessarily think about it, but you could go back to the old heyday of just punting it back out.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I said it last week.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, I don't know if that quick thinking of, oh, hey, I should just kick it out, actually comes into play when you're going, uh-oh, I need to get it out. I need to get it out.
Yeah, you know, well, that you got to pre-plant that thought there. And yeah. That's where the coach comes in. Tell them, yeah, actually, you should, you know what? Dedicate, after how close all of these games have been this year, dedicate 15 minutes to a practice and get your entire team to practice punting it out of the end zone.
No kidding.
Even in the NFL, they had issues with the new kickoff on special teams as well on the Steelers. So it happens, right? At all age groups teams, right?
Absolutely.
That could be a difference maker. And, you know, to your credit, Cole, it was a difference maker in this game, especially, right? Between a win and a tie. So,
yeah. And we've had that in back to back weeks now where we've had the game come down to inside the final minute, this final 30 seconds, and it's been sealed by a punt into the end zone where a returner's not been able to get it out.
Yeah. It's a pattern.
Doesn't get more Canadian football than that.
No, it doesn't. And it's a beautiful part of our game. Some people question it, but
it makes
Canadian football Canadian football.
Yeah.
I love American football too, don't get me wrong, but I love the Canadian rules and what makes it distinctly Canadian.
I love the fact that we have special teams. Besides just field goal.
Yeah.
moving away from that back to our league, we have our final game, which was actually our first game of the week, between the Colts and the Mavericks. Going into that game, the Colts were 1-2. The Mavericks were also 1-2, having just won their week beforehand. And again, I don't necessarily know if this is how we were expecting this game to go.
No, I think it was a surprise.
But it was pretty much all Mavericks. Again, watching through the camera lens, I don't have any notes or much on it, but it, like, that entire game was the offense was all Mavericks, the defense was all Mavericks, and the Colts just really weren't able to get anything going at any point in time. And it showed because the final score in that game was 23 for the Mavericks and only two for the Colts. And I believe that two was just a safety. Don't quote me on this. I might be wrong, and I apologize if I am. I think it was just a punt surrendered, like a punt safety surrender
right
for field position.
Yeah. Well, and that, so that's week four. And so that brings us to our updated standings,
which are the Raiders leading the league, sitting solo atop with a 4-0-0 record. The Bulldogs sitting second with a 3-1-1 record, just edging out the Eagles because they have 22 fewer points against. Wildcats sit fourth with a 2-2 record. They lead the Colts and the Mavericks due to head-to-head matchups. Cowboys are in fifth because they also beat the Mavericks. And the Lions, who are also 2-2, are seventh because they haven't played any of the three teams mentioned, and they've given up the most points against. So that's how that works, if anybody's questioning it, why the Wildcats are higher in the points against. Yeah. Then I did spend like 10 minutes at least looking at that, trying to figure that out on Saturday. Then we have the Stampeders moving up in the standings up to eighth with a 1-3 record. They edge the Colts, who are also 1-3, again, on points against. And then we have the Rebels, who I think James mentioned are probably the best 0-4 team he has ever seen.
Yeah, I stand by that statement.
Who bring up the rear with an 0-4 record. And yeah, like the Rebels, I think, are just unfortunate with their results.
Yeah, they've had some really close games, and they've lost a couple of those last play, you know, scenarios. So yeah, I think they're due for a win.
Yeah.
And if they get a few bounces, they'll get one soon.
While we move into our nine-a-side games, I do need to make an amendment from a statement I made last week about teams having 90 players, which is factually untrue. It was an over-exaggeration, and I've been asked to correct that number. There was a number I said off the top of my head. I don't actually know the roster numbers, but I know that this caused a little bit of chaos and headaches for at least one coach following our podcast last week, so I apologize for that. But no, don't teams actually have 90 players on their teams? They have not cut anybody either. That was just a bit of an exaggeration to just highlight that a couple of teams have a little bit more depth than others because they are able to field a nine-a-side team, but they don't actually have that many players.
Right. Well, moving on. Thank you for the clarification.
We do have nine-a-side games this week. None of us here watch them. We were hoping that Kevin was going to be able to join us in this podcast, but he appears to not be here, so I'll do a quick run through of them. First game of the night was the Raiders against the Wildcats 1. The Wildcats 1 ended up winning that one 27-12. That was followed up by Wildcats 2 taking on the Eagles, where the Wildcats 2 ended up winning that one 42-0. And that was followed up by the Cowboys taking on the Chiefs, and the Chiefs won that one 22-8.
Okay, and so just before we got on the podcast here, I was able to post those scores on the website. And if you go to open that, the news story, you can actually see the standings. So I'll quickly run down right now. Number one spot is Wildcats 2-0. Chestermere Chiefs also 2-0. Again, they're same tiebreakers as the regulars. So
points against.
Head to head points against.
Yeah.
Third place, Cowboys are 1-1. Fourth place, Wildcats 1 are 1-1. Fifth place, Airdrie Raiders are 0-2. And last place, sixth overall, Okotoks Eagles 0-2. So I'll keep posting those news articles, try to get them within a day, depending on how busy it gets.
Not to make a standings post for that too for our social media. I've been posting the scores this year, which is we haven't done previously.
Yeah.
It's nice to get those up actually this year because I'm actually getting those this year.
Well, that's good. Yeah,
That's the first key.
I was supposed to get them too, so I could do the article. I had to wait for your post.
It's a good thing I posted it pretty quickly.
It is. Yeah, and that's a good thing I was able to use those to get the proper info. So, thank you.
Then now just I guess looking forward to week five. Should be an interesting start to our week. We have the battle for second place. Both 3-1 teams, the Bulldogs, are taking on the Eagles at 8:30 in the morning. That game will be followed up by the Lions and the Rebels at 10:45, which is again a good test for both of those teams. Lions looking to bounce back from playing the powerhouse, and Rebels looking to see if they can not lose by a score and actually get a win.
This could be their week.
They deserve a win. I think they should deserve more than one right now, but. That game will be followed by the Stampeders taking on the Cowboys. Two great coaching mindsets battling against each other on that
I
one.
think that's going to be another good game.
Yeah, it should be. Stampeders are going to feel a lot of, coming off their first win. Yeah, I'm sure Dave Hardy and his team, offensive coordinator Carlo Lucente, they were pretty pumped up after the win. But that Cowboys team, like you said, I don't think anybody expected that Bulldogs result. So I think this could be a great battle between them. Let's see if the Cowboys are building on to something, or see what happens when these two teams face off at Hellard on 1 p.m.
Also at 1 p.m., we have the Wildcats taking on the Colts. And then our final game of the day, the Raiders will take on the Mavericks.
Wildcats have had two tight losses in a row. Well, they had the one loss to the Raiders, which wasn't as tight, but that one on the Rouge, I'm sure they're going to try to, stop that two-game losing streak. And Colts, obviously, they didn't have the greatest results against the Mavericks, so that should be a good game too.
Yeah, two teams looking to bounce back from woes last week. Our 9-a-side games next week. We have the, yeah, that's on the 21st. We have the Eagles taking on the Raiders, the Wildcats 1 taking on the Chiefs, Wildcats 2 taking on the Cowboys, and all three of those games will be taking place at Ed Egger Athletic Park in Airdrie. We have road games. Actually, not our only road games this year. We have our 12-man league with one road game this year. That's coming up shortly.
This weekend's games are all up in Airdrie.
Just for the nine side, not
Right.
for Saturday's games.
No, just nine aside.
No, should be hopefully another good week of football. Of course, again, we always have not always, but we have Gordy's food drive coming up in a couple weeks' time on October 11th, just under a month away now.
That's right.
Teams are encouraged to bring a non-perishable food item, or well, not just one, as many as they want.
Yeah, I'm sure there's, a few cans in the cupboard that have been there a little while. Clean out your cupboards.
I mean, make sure they're not expired first, but
It's for a good cause.
I'm sure all the teams. I know the Stampeders have already put out their verbiage on it to get the donations. And you mentioned. I know two top teams get a pizza party, right? So I'm sure there'll be some good internal competition. And I think even from money aspect, what was it, $1,362 or $1,392 was raised last year as well.
That's right. Yeah.
I was gonna say, let me scroll through Instagram, but it's not loading.
I remember from your great sheets that you give us announcers. So hopefully they can all teams can surpass that total this year. That'd be great.
No, it was. I think if I remember correctly, our numbers were down a little bit from the year before, but it's still a good, solid number that we're having, and it's mentioned to us that it's like The Veterans Food Drive uses that for like that is their main intake for several weeks until Christmas time. So it's very, very crucial for them, everything that's donated.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's important to support that organization because they support so many veterans in our community.
Additionally, we also have the Calgary Stampeders 50-50. There's a Stamps game this Friday. I highly encourage anyone who's not, well, not signed up or not registered to volunteer. People like S Scott, who are Rough Riders fans, might not be as inclined to sell as many tickets, even though it's a very good cause because you do win a signed Stampeders jersey. But there's the, still that incentive regardless to do well and to help volunteer for that because you do win a signed Stampeders jersey, and jerseys nowadays are not cheap.
No.
No, they sure aren't. And I've already worked one of the Stamps. I did the Stampeders Blue Bombers game, which was it's to all the families out there. Like, if your teams are asking for you to volunteer, do it. It's a great time. Yeah, it's been great weather out here in Calgary. It's all for a great cause. And as well, you get to, at the end of your shift, you get to watch a little bit of the game as well, which is always a plus. So I highly suggest that. It was a good day, the day I did it.
I
Rider
imagine
fan
even
or
if
not,
you
they're cool. So
I imagine even if you do like sell tickets, like if you walk through the bleachers and stuff, no one's gonna really stop you from just taking a couple seconds to watch a player or two either.
100%, 100%. Yeah, you said, but you're
Yeah.
right. I think actually one of the families that worked it actually won one of those stamp jerseys. So yeah, there's definitely some internal competition, which is nice. So
Yeah, no, it's been a it's I've been posting stories about that, and it's been a good mix of team representation. We've even had some Saffle players that have contributed to the selling the most tickets as well. So it's going, everyone's contributing. So there's two games left Friday, and then I think there's one in October. That one is a Bantam game day, the one in October. So volunteering is going to be a little harder due to some teams still playing when kickoff is happening. But again, still all that money comes back. Well, not all of it. There's a good chunk of money that comes back to the CBFA, and that all goes towards things like equipment and keeping the season fees for all you parents down massively, because things like helmets, especially, are not cheap. And a lot of that funding goes directly towards helmets as well as a lot of the other equipment.
That's it.
I think
Make
that's
sure, yeah, and if you can help out. And then there's also the CBFA's 50-50. We had our second draw of the year this past Saturday. I'm not sure exactly how much the prize was, but I believe it was in the neighborhood of the first one, which was, a little over $1,000 for the winner.
last I heard it was over 1,100.
Beautiful.
But I don't remember. Again, I don't remember the exact amount. I do have our winner here. Winner was Kim Tran with the winning ticket of C2340. I did
Beautiful.
post it on our story on Saturday, but yeah.
Excellent. Well,
Yeah.
congratulations, Kim. And there will be new sales. So. We're doing the 50-50 for the next 2 weekends. It'll be on the same draw. So again, next draw for our CBFA 50-50 is in 2 weeks. You can buy tickets right up until then. On game day, look for Mary in the stands. She'll be selling them there, or you can find one of the links in our socials.
And the QR codes will be posted around the grounds too.
Perfect.
But I think that's everything for this week.
Excellent.
It's really hard to follow Scott though, with everything he remembers from the games.
I know, I know.
I have a memory for all. I don't actually write a lot of it down. I'm trying to a little bit as well. You even mentioned it last call there, Cole, about sometimes you got good notes, sometimes you don't. I thankfully actually I think I watched a little bit of video from the game they sent as well, so it made me remember who got what on that. So I do get that benefit. So
you have the advantage of you can watch your son's game film.
Exactly. Right,
with James, I don't have that benefit.
For sure, for sure. So but I do want to give you thanks again for the heads up as well, because with my other son playing high school football, I know our high school coach has gotten contact, I think, with Leah, so see if I'll do some of the high school games this week as well. So hopefully I'll be there Friday as well. So yeah, should be a good time. So
very cool. Awesome.
Lots of people going around.
Great.
We're swamped.
For sure, for sure. Well, thanks again for having me on, guys. Definitely appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks for joining us once again. And thanks, everybody out there, for listening. We will once again see you down at Schuldice Park for game day Saturday in the CBFA. And Cole, what do you say?
In the meantime, go football.
The CBFA podcast is brought to you by longtime players of the game sponsor, Wolf Cadillac Calgary. Check out their selection of new and used vehicles at their new location, 756 100 First Street, Southwest Calgary, or online, www.wolfcadillaccalgary.com. We would also like to thank the Canadian Brewhouse and the Calgary Sports and Entertainment Corporation for their sponsorship of the CBFA. Support such as theirs is essential for minor football in Alberta to continue to grow and thrive. Thank you for listening.